night, and a couple months later, she invited my boyfriend over for dinner. Ooh, like that wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm. She invited your boyfriend over?
For dinner.
Wow. So that was sort of a quick recovery, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's relatively common. I think most parents, it's a rare case when parents eventually don't turn around. And you never, I can't expect anyone to have a wonderful reaction the first time, but eventually things do come around. And they get used to the idea. It's just such a shock.
You have to pursue it, too, I think.
Yeah.
I
mean,
well, we have a call, and somebody's going to talk to us about... well, we'll see. Hang on, press that one, I think. Hello? Hang on. Okay. Gee, this is very interesting. Oh, I think that's for us. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Okay.
All right, so, well, I'm calling because you're into this this thing about coming out story, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah? So, anyway, I kind of came out when I was 15 years old, and that was about 10 years ago. And the funniest thing is that I used to hang around with this, like, really cute girl.
Yeah. Good choice.
My father used to tell me, are you gay, you know? And I was like, come on, you know, I'm not gay. You know me, I'm not gay. And he was like telling me, you know, well, it's okay if you're gay. There's no problem with me, you know, I still love you, and it's okay. And I was like, no, I'm not gay. You know, leave me alone with that. And so finally, I got to a point where I figured out that I was gay.
And how did you do that?
Oh, yeah?
How did you do that?
How did, well...
It was the cute girl.
Sorry, okay. Anyway, I went up to him and I said, you know, you were right, I'm gay. And oh my God, right? He had appointment for me with all the psychologists, and I was going to see all the psychologists and psychiatrists because, you know, of course, my mother had done something wrong, you know.
Of course.
Blame it on the mothers.
Oh yeah, of course, it was my mother because my mother's gay.
That makes sense.
Did you know? So what happened?
Anyway, finally, he got over the fact that I was gay. We just don't talk about it now. He doesn't want to know, you know, he doesn't want to talk about it. He's like, it's your life, that's cool, but I just don't want to talk about it. And that's what it is right now.
What's your relationship with your mother?
No, with my father. Oh, no, with my
mother.
What
about your mother?
No, with my mother, it's really cool. She's still in the closet. Which is really too bad, but she's very happy for me.
it's a happy
Give
call
her a call and ask her to call us.
Tell her to call us.
So tell me, if you were going to give advice to somebody who is coming out, what would you say to them?
Hello?
I'm still there.
Okay.
I'm thinking.
You obviously noticed that we don't.
Just go for it, you know.
Take the plunge.
Yeah, just go for it, you know. It's not really dangerous, you know. And if they, I mean, if they loved you before, if they really loved you before, they'll still love you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so nice.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, that's an explanation you have to make to anybody that you come out to, is that I'm still the same person. I was gay before I told you this. Mm-hmm. There's nothing different about me. The only difference is now you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I truly believe that. Yeah, it's really funny when you come out to people like friends or shit like that, and they're not gay, and the reaction you get, it's like, oh yeah, oh well, that's really cool, but you know, don't touch me.
That's fine. I won't lend you any money.
That's right.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, thanks for calling us.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy Gay Day.
Yeah. Well, when it came around to my mother coming into town after a number of years, well, the last time she came into town was when I was still straight, and now being gay, I decided I will be brave and I will not de-dyke my apartment.
De-dyke.
Well, you know,
we've all done that.
Everyone's kind of like taken the books and hidden them away and you know, turned things around and lovers' pictures.
I've never done that.
Oh, I know a lot of friends who have done that.
I just polished my silver.
So my mother came into town. She stayed for a weekend. I have a very small apartment. She didn't say a word. I mean, not even about the pin that says lesbian that's hanging on the wall. Not a word. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Perhaps she's just not that comfortable about it, Wendy.
How could it be?
Maybe she
come
needs
out
glasses.
To someone, I had, it was funny, when I came out to my mother, I was involved with someone, and that is primarily why I came out to my mother, because I was seriously involved with someone. And this woman was older than me, about 15 years older, actually. And I was 19, 20, around there. Well, this woman had been over to our house for dinner, to my mother's house for dinner, had, you know, she had bought Christmas presents for them and everything, but as soon as she found out she was my lover, it was like, I don't want that woman
in my
house.
Oh my God, is that right?
Well,
yeah,
but
because
she was older,
yeah, because she was
led
older,
you astray.
Yes, that's exactly it. And and the funny part is that the woman... That woman
didn't.
Was the
you
first.
Did.
It was her first.
Oh, no.
For years.
We must talk about this over a drink later, then. This story has possible. Have you ever noticed, though, too? My mother says things to me like, I'm fine about this, I can deal with this, but when you come over with your lovers, just don't be all over each other. What does that mean? You know? And then she says, do you have to call her darling?
Now, everybody here has been talking about their mothers. What about fathers?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Because at least for men, there's that macho
right,
thing,
that's true,
too.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Well, I want my son to play baseball, play football, and beat people up on the hockey.
Be a darling.
You know? And that's a different side of the story. Mothers are supposed to be, you know, traditionally...
That's right.
They
always
nurturing. And, yeah, and the fathers are the ones that are supposed to shape you into being a man.
Right.
If you're gay, that's
right.
The father's. I mean, all the anticipation of the successfulness
right,
of the child
right.
is
the
shattered.
Legacy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tom.
Well, my father cried. What can I say?
Really?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was. And my father never cries.
Yeah.
Did you cry with him?
No, I didn't cry. No, I.
You were too
macho.
Too macho.
That's right.
Dad, stop crying, damn it.
No, I mean, my father had been reacting to this for years. I mean, I remember when I was really young, I used to play with the boy next door. I used to play house, and I was always the wife and mother, you know. I used to dress
you
up.
You wore the apron. The,
yes.
I mean.
Well, no, I used to wear this, like, long... I used to wear this long nightgown. I remember that my mother, you know, had been thrown away. I'll never forget, at one point, he just came sort of around, we were playing behind a tree or something, he came around and just ripped it right off of me and said, I don't ever want you to see you wearing this again. And he was kind of, it was like
really
final
dramatic
word.
Moment.
Yes, so it was scarred for life, and of course...
I have a friend who is very much into baseball, hockey, when she was a little kid, always wore a baseball cap backwards, and she tells me that she came out to her parents when she was in her teens, but... Her mother said, "No, when you were little, every so often your father would ask me, would you be upset if our daughter was a lesbian?" And her mother would go, "Of course she won't be." Guess what?
Guess what? Chris.
Yes.
Father.
Your father.
Father.
Yeah.
My father. Well, I haven't actually talked to my father about this. This is only a recent occurrence in the past 2 months, and I've come back up to school since. My father actually came out and asked my mother one day, and my mother told him, yes, he is. And that was it. I haven't heard anything from him since, and I really wanted to talk to him, but they went off to Australia for a month, and then I was coming here. I really only had about 2 or 3 days, and it just didn't work. But he hasn't treated me any different on the phone. I mean, the conversations are the same. I think he's just kind of like that anyhow. He's just he takes everything inside and deals with it that way. I don't think there'll be a huge problem. I mean, and having my mother on my side as well really helps.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't want to do it that way. I think the best way to do it is tell them both at the same time, because then you're going to put one against the other. One's going to know, the other one's going to be upset because the one, why did he tell me first? What did he tell you first? Does he like you better? I mean, you've got this parental jealousy thing that...
Or maybe he doesn't like me better, and that's why he told me first.
That's right.
But don't you think it's important to share with both parents? Because otherwise you have this silence. But like, your father hasn't mentioned it. He may never mention it. That's the danger,
right.
Unless you bring it up again, and that's so hard.
My mother kind of put me off a little bit, because when I told her, when we finally talked about it, she said, well, I don't think you should tell your father right now. And he was going through, he was looking for a job, and having his mother had just died, and she didn't think it was an appropriate time. And I think she was more protecting him just at the time, because he needed a little bit of time to get over the other things. And it's kind of, after the time goes on, it gets a little bit more difficult to do that, you know.
Yeah, it does.
Because the mother gets comfortable.
If you don't have this conversation soon, you may be as I was with my stepfather. We never discussed it. And then it became embarrassing and difficult for me to discuss it with him. And of course, I discussed it with my mother. But I'll tell you, we had a very bad reaction in my family initially was my brother who kicked the window of a gay bar inn that I used to frequent. There went my free drinks.
My God.
Right out the window. Ha, yeah. Ha, ha.
I haven't.
But now, isn't that clever? That we just all just thought like that. I know. I'm born for radio, I can tell. but now, of course, you know, now it's great. In fact, it's almost, I don't know, have you ever sort of been introduced as, this is my so-and-so, my family, the lesbian, it's almost like a yucky thing to be, you know, to have one in your family. Then I feel I have to act so dykish, and I'm not sure how. Lindy, you'll have to give me lessons, obviously.
Me?
Well, you can tell me you're a dyke. I don't know.
I'm wearing a dress.
I don't even play football.
I don't even play
frequently. Frequently, people have, siblings have a better relationship with each other than they do with their parents, and I know a couple people who have gone to the brother and sister first, mm-hmm. and talked to them, just because they're in the same generation, mm-hmm. And they've been doing the same things, have the same, and sometimes even have the same friends. There's, mm-hmm. you know, a level of camaraderie there that helps. The parents are kind of like these things on the podium that it's so difficult to talk to, and the brother and sister are much better.
I have three brothers, all of whom are extremely heterosexual, I think.
Painfully so.
And I've never discussed it with them. I only ever discussed it with my mother. But the thing is that I have this friend who's a hairdresser in the town that I'm from. And he's a real raver, you know. And he says, Stephen, he says, you really got to get this thing sorted out with your brothers. I said, why? He says, every other week I've got one in this seat, and I'm cutting their hair, and they're asking me all sorts of questions about homosexuality. They say, I think my brother's gay. He says, they've all come to me individually. No need to tell them.
I haven't actually come out to my brother. That's mm-hmm. the only member of my family, and I feel badly about that because it does create this alienation.
Is he older?
He's older, and at the time I didn't tell him because I was actually afraid to, because he's very homophobic. He's mm-hmm. actually
homophobic.
Very.
Very, very homophobic.
Stumbles over that word.
That's well, I'm actually I'm hesitating to say he's a gay basher. Like he used to brag to me when we'd sit up all night talking about how he used to go beat up the fags when they walked out of the gay bar, and it was like, yeah.
Well, you might as well just wait for him to come out to you then.
That's right.
Probably
waiting
for us outside.
But a lot of women seem to have problems with brothers.
Mm-hmm.
When their sisters seem to take it in stride much better than brothers do. I don't know if guys have that problem with their brothers. Or maybe they have that problem with their sisters.
Well, probably,
I don't know.
Because we're sleeping with all the women they like to be sleeping
with. Oh, didn't think of that.
I'm going to give out the telephone number one more time, because we do have time for another call. It's 398-4616. That's 398-4616. You're listening to CKUT's Gay Day, and we're talking about coming out. Siblings. Guelo.
I ain't got none. but what about parents who come out to their children? For example...
Well, that's what Wendy was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You weren't here.
You weren't here.
I wasn't here. Yeah. Oh, well, I had... You know,
we won't even
I had
ask
a,
where you were.
I had a lover, and he used to say, I know your mother's Leighton Dyke. And I'm going, no way! My mother's not in Leighton Dyke. Well, last year, and she's been married now to her second husband for about 8 years, and she said, well, you know, would you be offended if I told you that if a woman... I couldn't believe she was saying this. If you were offended... You would you be offended if I told you that I nearly slept with a woman? And I went, no, not at all.
Surprise!
It was an odd situation because it was like it put me in her place like a few years before,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was like, oh yeah, and I nearly did it. I was nearly had an affair with a woman at work, but she had a jealous lover, and she threatened me to tell my husband, so I didn't do it.
Did it bother you at all?
No, I was just it just bothered me that
she was cheating on your father.
No, that she has lived this long and held it inside for so long, and that she continues to have this relationship with this man, yet has yearnings for another woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One point I wanted to bring up, you said you have no siblings. That is a difficult situation in itself because there's that, well, the family name is gone.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
it.
Well, I live with that because I'm the last, like, of my namesake. Like, there's no other boys in the family, so, like, that's it. So that's a pressure. But, and a few years ago, I would have thought that it's a greater pressure than I feel it is today because of our in new sensibilities about raising families and about same-sex spousal benefits. I don't see it as like
an end.
That's having a child is something that I can strive for now.
But that's your feeling. The problem is parents who haven't been accustomed to and haven't been in on the discussion and really know what's going on, mm-hmm. to
but
them, it's that's it.
But when it's a choice, yeah. if no child or you having a child, I think parents would opt to be grandparents. Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things. The first thing my mother said when we discussed it was, "I'm not going to be a grandmother."
Mm-hmm. I had a friend of mine who said that, whose mother said that, and he went back, "Well, yes, I am." She goes, "You're not raising a child in that atmosphere."
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Well, my child would beg to differ. I think I'd like to close off the hour with a fun coming out story.
Okay.
Do we have time for
yeah,
one?
Yeah, quick,
more?
Quick.
Okay, this is my first date.
Uh-oh.
Coming out story. I had a friend who was very much into just being very, fun-loving, and we decided we would go and see the Ink Spots. That's this old group, acapella
group. I've heard
of
them.
Yes, and it was they were going to be playing in a bar in the East End, in a very fancy dinner bar in the East End, where the security people wear three-piece suits, and you can see the holsters underneath.
Ooh.
And I realized it was like very heavy-duty Italian neighborhood, and it made me a little bit nervous. But we went in. She was dressed in a tuxedo, and
she was in a tux.
And she went up to the doorman and said, "Is my tie on straight?" Of course, and that kind of broke the ice. And I was with my gown, and my heels, and my stockings, and the makeup, and the jewelry, the whole bit. And we were with a couple of other women, and she would go asking people, "Will you take our picture? Will you take our picture?" It was about the time of my birthday, and. You know how they say, "Well, anyone who has an anniversary, come on down and dance this, it's a waltz."
So
I end up, we did. And I thought we were going to get shot, actually, because people were almost under the table. And in the end, we closed the place, and the owner said to us, "You girls really livened up the joint." She said, "Yeah, I'm going to come back with all my friends."
Uh-oh. Well, that's it, folks. This has been our little coming out garden party. Thank you all for being here. It was lots of fun.
And thank you for listening.
Yes, exactly. And there's...
Cole Porter was one of those immensely talented gay men who have left a notable mark on the world. A surprisingly large number of the popular songs of our century, songs everyone knows which remain alive through each new generation, were written by this elegant, urbane, witty man. He was born in 1891 in Peru, Indiana, a small farming center which was about the last place you'd expect such a sophisticate to come from. The sophistication came later, at Eastern schools, including Yale, from life in New York, and from sojourns in Europe. He started writing music early, before he reached his teens. He didn't have a great deal of formal musical education, but he had enough inborn musical talent to make up for that. He was putting songs into New York and London musical shows while still in university, and was amusing the society circles of two continents with his music and lyrics not long after. It was in the late 1920s when Cole's music began to make a larger mark on the world. He had progressed from simply writing songs for Broadway musicals to writing whole musicals themselves. For the next quarter century, many of the biggest hit songs on Broadway came from his pen. He also wrote widely for Hollywood musicals, which made his songs even more widely known around the world. Of course, not every song he wrote became a smash hit. However, he wrote many of the biggest songs of mid-century, songs like Night and Day, Begin the Begin, I've Got You Under My Skin, Love for Sale, Just One of Those Things, Anything Goes, Every Time We Say Goodbye, to name just a few. They were well-crafted, with melodies that stuck in one's brain and lyrics which caught at one's heart. Cole wasn't openly gay in the larger world, though his friends and fellow sophisticates were always in the know. He and his wife Linda were married for 35 years and were a loving and mutually supportive couple. He found his sexual pleasures elsewhere, sometimes with friends and colleagues, but more often with hustlers and rough trade. Cole's health began to deteriorate in the late 50s. From then till his death in 1964, he wrote no music. Still, he had managed to turn out a body of work which was not only quite popular at the time, but which is likely to remain popular for many years to come.
Yeah. Echoes from Our Past. In 1925, Kimitake Harioka was born to an upper-middle-class couple in Tokyo. He proved to be a sickly child, and though it's not clear if this was an influencing factor, he was raised by his maternal grandmother. Until the age of 12, the young boy was coddled and allowed to pursue his quiet activities and act and dress like a girl. He remarked that visits to cousins took their toll, for there was an unspoken understanding that at his cousin's he must act like a boy. In his teens, Kimitake began to write, and by the age of 16, he published his first story. He also fell in love with a male classmate that year, Omi. This was also the year that he adopted the pen name Yukio Mishima. Over the years, Mishima became a prolific writer. He was considered a genius by the Japanese critics, and his works were translated and published around the world. He also wrote and produced plays for modern and traditional Japanese theater. But Mishima was in the public eye for yet another reason. He had taken up bodybuilding and regularly flexed his muscles for the photo pages of the popular press. As his notoriety increased, so did the pressure to marry. It was highly unusual for a Japanese man to remain single into his 30s, and Mishima's secret gay nightlife was at risk of exposure. As a concession to his dying mother, Mishima agreed to marry. Mishima and his wife Yoko settled in Tokyo, where they raised two children, though it's said that Mishima was a distant husband who increasingly sought out male lovers. He continued to write, but also assembled a private army of samurai-type young warriors with a philosophy of pro-imperialism. On November 25th, 1970, Mishima and his closest devotee, Masakatsu Morita, took an army general hostage and was pressuring 1,500 assembled troops to reject democracy and restore power to the emperor. A little later that same day, Mishima and Morita committed harakiri in the general's office. So ended the life of the man fondly known as the Leonardo da Vinci of Japan. Echoes from our past. In 1592, a girl was born to a noble Spanish family. Her name was Doña Catalina de Erauso. She was put into a convent as a tot, although it's uncertain if it was because she was expected to take the religious veil in the tradition of noble Spanish women, or if it was because her father had no use for another daughter in the house. At any rate, Doña Catalina didn't take well to convent life and escaped when she was 15. She cut her hair, fashioned boyish clothing from her habit, and roamed Spain posing as a boy. She joined the Spanish army and went to Latin America, earning the reputation of best swordsman in the new land. Doña Catalina was sentenced to death at least four times, but always got away. Books were even written about the adventures of this Robin Hood of Latin America. Her male disguise made her attraction to women easier to fulfill. She was even engaged on several occasions, but disappeared before the wedding day. Doña Catalina managed to keep up the facade for 15 years, until a serious wound led her to share her secret with a priest. Doña Catalina returned to Europe and found herself the center of attention in Spain and Italy. Granted, she was a curiosity for her cross-dressing stunt and her wild streak, but she also gained the attention of some unlikely fans. The poet Montalbán wrote about her, and King Philip awarded her a pension for her part in defending Spanish territory, and Pope Urban VIII gave her special dispensation to wear men's clothes. Doña Catalina found Europe boring, though, and returned to Mexico in 1630, where she promptly fell in love with someone's wife. She challenged the husband to a duel, but he backed down, ostensibly because she was female, but more likely because of her reputation as an expert marksman, or markswoman. Doña Catalina's friends convinced her to leave town, and she wandered through Latin America for another 20 years until her death in 1650. Echoes from our past. June 27th, 1969 marks a significant day in the heritage of the North American gay and lesbian rights movement. In fact, the Stonewall Riots, as they are now remembered, triggered a dramatic change in the dynamics between the lesbian and gay communities and the organized mainstream. Prior to June 1969, the New York police would routinely raid gay bars. Usually, a handful of effeminate men would be arrested while the other bar patrons would hide their faces and flee. The bar owners would be fined, then business as usual. But this time it was different. The crowd fought back, and the half-dozen police officers from the tactical squad sent to raid the bar and the bar owners found themselves barricaded inside the bar, praying that reinforcements would come before the angry crowd outside burned down the building. That weekend turned out to be a weekend full of such skirmishes with police, and within days the city's first gay power rally was held in Washington Square. While the polite picketers of the previous 4 years had primed the atmosphere of change with their Homosexual Reminder Day marches in Washington, the Stonewall Riots triggered the events which gave birth to a more militant gay pride movement. In the months following the riots, the Mattachine Society and Daughters of Bilitis organized a candlelight solidarity march, descended on Washington to liven up the final Homosexual Reminder Day march, and, as organized community leaders, started a dialogue with the police department to promote gay and lesbian rights. The final Sunday of every June from 1970 onward has been marked by a gay pride parade, and this tradition has spread across North America to most metropolitan centers. In New York, this event has become the biggest yearly parade, bringing in some 500,000 participants in 1990. New York is transformed for one weekend. A lavender line is painted down Fifth Avenue to Christopher Street to mark the parade route, and the Empire State Building is bathed in lavender light for the day.
I hung out with this time last year. They would sense a difference. I'm just much more comfortable with
it. What were you doing last year at this time?
This time last year, I was working in a funky little cafe, health food store in Antigonish, and singing at night most nights. They had one lounge in town and a hotel that had a lounge as well. And I would very often sing on my own, or I would team up from musicians with musicians from school. I studied jazz at St. Evex for a year, and you know, would sing anything from Madonna to Edie Brickell. You know, this kind of thing.
So what's part of your repertoire now? What kind of tunes do you generally sing?
Oh, well, I've been told I like to sing a lot about love and sex. Uh-huh. You know?
What does that say about you?
Well, I guess it means that I love both, right? I must. And I sing it's on your a mind. Lot about them. It's on my mind, yeah. So.
Do you write your own tunes?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
And when you perform, you sort of mix cover tunes and your own tunes.
Yeah, I've been playing it safe since I got here, because when I first started to play at Lilith, nobody knew me. And I tried to incorporate more than my own songs, some French songs. And so now that's what I'm writing more since I got here. I have lots of inspiration walking down St. Denis.
Do you?
Oh, yes.
What kind of inspiration exactly, Joanne?
The sights are wonderful for the soul.
You're just keeping your eyes open.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. Just hanging out and girl watching and people watching. And
Yeah. Well, that's what summer in the city is all about, really.
I guess
everybody's
so.
Everybody's out and about, because everybody hibernates all wintertime.
That's right. It's bloody cold here.
You have, or I guess there has been some discussion about the fact that you sing a lot of men's tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and there's a very good reason for that. I mean, I've been singing a long time in straight bars, you know, to pay the rent. And also, you know, I guess when I pick out a tune, the tunes that I sing for the most part move me, the lyrics, okay? And even if I'm singing songs that are written by men, I never think of them in that way. You know, as being performed or written by a male artist. It obviously strikes something in me, and I never do the song identical to the original artist. I make it my own, and the more I sing it, the more it becomes my own too.
Yeah.
So I'm really not hung up on that. I know there are some women who are, and I can appreciate their point of view, but for me, I sing for people, for men and for women, and that's the way it is. I just...
After all, it's you, it's your perspective, and it's how you feel about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we can tell whose side I'm on, can't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. No bias.
What have you got planned for the summer? Are you singing in Montreal?
I'm singing as much as I can and wherever possible. And
give us a hint.
Well, I do, right now, most Saturday afternoons, I rehearse with a friend of mine who I study jazz with, actually, and... So you might catch us at upstairs. You might catch us in old Montreal busking.
Okay, you're going to be doing some of that this summer.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm checking into some bars as well. And after all, that's what I've been doing. You know.
Yeah.
There's an abundance of musicians in Montreal, and it's very different from being home in Nova Scotia. You know, where musicians, good musicians, are few and far between, and there's a lot of work. And it pays very well, whereas in Montreal there's an abundance of wonderful musicians, wonderfully talented musicians, not enough places to play, and uh-huh. The pay is certainly minimal.
Uh-huh.
You know? So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, this radio station will keep you posted on Joanne Drudge's movements. And Joanne's now going to sing. We're going to have some live music happening from the studio. Are you up for it?
I sure am.
It's like a steam bath in here after that comedy troupe, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you want to introduce this tune? Is this
this is a Joan Armatrading song. I had a mad crush on Joan, like many other women, I'm sure, for many years. And it's called Love and Affection, and I love the lyrics. I guess it's one of the first songs I sort of took to my heart, and when I first started to identify myself, I guess, as a lesbian. So take it away. Thank you.
I could really move, really move. I could really dance, really dance.
The station you are listening to is a member of the National Campus and Community.